What's up, NBA fans? We are hitting the tail end of the NBA season, and we actually have a few teams celebrating reaching 50 games in their win column in quite some time. OKC hitting 50 wins this last week. The Timberwolves hitting 50 wins this last week. And we also have the Houston Rockets on an insane win streak of 10 games with Jalen Green going off, with the Warriors getting a crucial win yesterday against the Orlando Magic, because without that win, the Rockets could have tied them. I think if they would have had the tiebreaker and perhaps passed them in the standings yesterday for that final play-in spot. Draymond Green was ejected early into that game, and it looked really close, like the big three era of the Warriors and their playoff streak could have ended yesterday, but they stay alive and the Rockets are still on fire, and we'll be talking about that and more. But before we jump into that, Sean, the OKC Thunder hit 50 wins, and the last time they did that, it was Westbrook, Ibaka, and Kevin Durant were all still together on the team. There's another team here that, not to get lost, is the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have won 50 games themselves, and it's been a long time since they found themselves with that big of a number in the win column. So, trivia question here for you, Sean, is what major movie ruled the box office the last time the Timberwolves won 50 games?
Oh my gosh, Alan. This is quite the question. I love this. So I thought this would be hard enough if you just asked me what year this even happened. But all right, so
I'll give you three chances, yeah, okay. and I'll give you a hint every time if you get it wrong.
So okay, I appreciate that. So my first inclination is to think that, like, with the Jimmy Butler era, there's a chance that they got to 50 wins. If not, we're gonna have to go all the way back to through the Kevin Love era, and then even before that, my third guess would have to be the Kevin Garnett era, which I really don't want to go all the way back to, but I'm afraid we might have to. But we'll start with the Jimmy Butler era. I can't remember exactly how many wins this team had, but it had to be close to 50, so I'll go with that era. And God, I have no idea what year that even was. I'll go with 2018, and I don't know. What was in the movies back then? Some Marvel movie, probably. I'll go with some Avengers movie. Avengers Infinity War.
Okay, well, that's not right. You're still far off, but I will say you got the studio right.
Oh,
in terms
okay.
of the movie. You got the studio right.
Nice.
So,
nice.
So I'll give you a hint. So I guess that's the hint.
That's
you got
the
studio.
Okay. But I'm not right on that. Okay. So now we're going to have to go back to the Kevin Love era. Man, I just don't know if they ever got to 50 wins. You know, I'm going to skip all the way back to the KG era. I'm just going to go with Iron Man.
Iron Man. You got the studio right again, but it's not it's not Iron Man. So the hint is it's a few years before that.
Oh my God. They made movies before Iron Man?
Yeah, and you got the studio, so I'll give you the second hint. The second hint is the movie is based on a bug.
Ant-Man? Oh, Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
Which Spider-Man, though?
Oh God. Spider-Man 2? I'll go with the Spider-Man 2 because I love Doc Ock in that movie.
It's Spider-Man 2.
Yes!
In 2004, the KG era was the last time this team won 50 games. It was KG, Latrice Sprewell, Wally Zerbiak, I think his
yes.
Zerbiak. It was the Timberwolves team that played the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. That Timberwolves team celebrated their second round win like they won the NBA championship and then ended up losing to the Lakers team that had Karl Malone, Gary Payton, and Kobe in it. But that's the last time this franchise celebrated 50 wins is Spider-Man
that's
2.
That's great. That's so long ago.
Pre-Marvel Studios, pre-MCU. This is still back when it was Sony owning the full rights of Spider-Man.
Holy cow. Yeah, that is a long time, but this has been a long time coming, and man, they've gone through so many iterations. I'm surprised that Jimmy Butler era actually didn't get to 50 wins. I know it was short-lived, but that team was really good. Obviously, they had a lot of issues with chemistry, which probably ultimately led to them not getting to that win total. But, I mean, that speaks volumes for this team, because if you look at just, like, the star power outright, It's like, obviously Karl-Anthony Towns was there for both, but like Rudy Gobert obviously making a huge impact, and really Anthony Edwards just elevating to that superstar level more than Jimmy Butler was even when he was on the team 5 or 6 years ago. That's just crazy. And yeah, awesome to see this team finally do well. I think I love to see teams like this in OKC, you know, have their time in the limelight, you know, have their time to actually be competitive. It's great to see that, you know, the system is working and it's not just the Lakers and the Celtics and the Warriors dominating for, you know, decades to come. Like, these other teams are making moves, and yeah, it's just, I think it's really healthy for the league.
Yeah, exactly. And the Timberwolves still got a few games left against the Nuggets too, to still test themselves to see if they can get that number one seed. They got the Nuggets tomorrow, and then they got the Nuggets again on April 10th.
Dang.
They can hang on with a few wins. They could possibly still take that.
That's the wild part seed. Is that, yeah, even though Karl-Anthony Towns has been out for an extended period here, they're still fighting to get that one seed. Like, they're only half a game behind Denver. They win that one tomorrow, they outright have the number one seed back again, which is crazy to think about, missing arguably, your second best player. And he might be coming back, you know, in a few weeks, and that's just another boost to this team. So yeah, this is going to be a very exciting stretch here with these three teams at the top, all within a half game of each other. Like, has no idea who's going to be 1 through 3.
Yeah, exactly. Talking about the Denver Nuggets, I want to dive into what I'm calling the most bizarre story in the NBA this last week.
I actually have no idea what this story is, so I'm very excited for you to tell it to me.
Yeah, I just sort of have stumbled into this story through my circles and rounds of listening to any and all NBA podcasts on through my the drive me and my wife made it in Tahoe. But we came up with this little snippet of a story happening in the NBA circle. So
God bless your wife for going through all of these random podcasts for you to find this story. I don't think my wife would ever allow that.
This is literally, I don't know how many people in national NBA circles know this story. It may just be a local Denver story.
I have not heard a thing about this. So the fact that you found this is like, this is some next level stuff.
But it's so bizarre. So we have out in Denver, Vicky Ray, a 17-year-old quote-unquote super fan.
72-year-old.
72-year-old super fan of the Denver Nuggets. She is 72 years old. She hasn't been she has been a longtime season ticket holder of the Denver Nuggets, 20-plus years, and was recently banned from the arena this last week. From ever going back to the Denver Nuggets arena. And she has been accused of passing notes to referees, hugging players, hugging referees, and also hitting a Denver Nugget player. She claims that she was allowed to come in early and greet players, and she would come in and make signs to cheer on the players. But she was told by Nuggets officials that early on, a few weeks before the banning, she wasn't allowed to come in and bring her signs anymore, that she wasn't allowed to come in early and greet the players. And then in February, she was accused that she grabbed the referee, and her quote is that he pushed me away and said no, which I knew was not true. And I said that I did not do that, saying that she did not grab this referee. And also she also quotes in one of the stories is the team wanted them to tell me that a player said Vicky hit me in the face, and she claims that's near impossible because her hand wouldn't be too far from reaching the players' faces, which is kind of fair.
It was the player anonymous.
Yeah, the player was not mentioned, as this is all coming from Vicky. The Denver Nuggets have released an official statement, but the official statement does not claim what exactly she was banned for, other than just that she has a series of activities that went against the code of conduct that the NBA and the Denver Nuggets have outlined. And here's another funny one that's kind of interesting. She was accused of passing notes to referees, which is against the rules. And she said, well, I did that, she admitted, but I passed notes to the referees every game for 25 years, which were in the notes being Christmas cards, birthday cards. And then she gives the ambiguous answer of everything.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah.
And birthday cards are nice.
Yeah, and then she also goes on to say that she has a hard time believing that the Cronkites are behind it, the Cronkites being the family who own the Denver Nuggets. She says, they've always been super nice to me. And she also goes on to suggest that the conspiracy here is that she's been banned because she has four seats that she paid $20,000 for, that she's been paying $20,000 to renew every year, which is also a little funky because, right, if the Denver Nuggets wanted these seats, they could easily just tell her, hey, if you want to renew, you got to pay this much higher price.
Yeah.
Which is what the Denver Nuggets did. Unless there's some sort of rent control law in Denver that does not allow the team to up the price on their season ticket seats, which I find impossible to believe.
Yeah.
It's just funny. But it's just such a bizarre story that a franchise would ban a player like this, a super longtime fan like this. And the fan so vehemently deny that she did any of this. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just have so many questions.
Yeah, that's the thing. There are so many questions because, right? It's like the arena is just, or basketball arenas are just outfitted with cameras across the board. And there is so much protection against players and referees these days that if you were to do this, you know, the NBA is not going to take it lightly. And I don't think they'd also go around accusing random folks of doing this, because I think there is also a lot of evidence. Like, yeah, there's cameras everywhere, there's securities everywhere. Someone would know that you did this, or someone would also know that you didn't do this.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Did she say what the signs were that they banned from her? Allowed, like, did they have profanity on them? Were they racist? Like, that's what I'm trying to figure out, because, like, yeah, by all accounts, she just seems like an old lady. But yeah, I mean, like you said, there's so much security and camera footage. Like, you'd be able to tell, you know, if she was doing something wrong. They wouldn't just ban her for no reason. Like, it's not like they're owned by James Dolan. Yeah. So, yeah, what a weird, yeah, like, and the team didn't come out with any specifics at all about, like, what she did wrong.
No, the team's quote statement, I have it here, let me see it. Basically, team declined a on-camera interview with the local news because Vicky Ray has also been going around doing her rounds all across the local news stations.
She's on
Denver.
A scorched earth path right
yeah.
now.
And the
their team reputation.
Yeah, the Denver Nuggets is boilerplate material, but it's like, we have made the difficult decision to revoke the season ticket membership of a longtime fan due to repeated violations and warnings of the NBA's code of conduct, as well as the Ball Arena's call of conduct. We are saddened to take this action, but have done so in accordance with league and venue guidelines.
Dang. So,
repeated war violations and repeated warnings. So we, at this point, we just have, you know, hearsay. We just have what basically Vicky Ray's perspective on it. Very vague perspective also. But what do you think, Sean? Is this a David and Goliath story, or is this just somebody who maybe just got a little too comfortable with the Denver Nuggets players and referees?
I mean, like, yeah. I mean, based off what we've talked about already, I'd say, yeah, like, she got a little too comfortable. Like, there has to be a degree of separation between the fans and the players and the refs and the coaches. Like, it's like, you know, how Russell Westbrook has to deal with so much flack with certain fan bases, like, that berate him, that use profane language against him, that try to get under his skin. Like, you can't have that direct connection to these guys, you know? Like, they're out there to entertain you. They're not there to be your circus, though. Like, they're not there to for you to be able to demean them because you paid a few hundred dollars. Like, that's not how the game works. So I totally understand that, like, hey, even though this person's paid us a lot of money, season ticket holder, obviously been around for a while, feels very connected, like, you still have to have a just good manners about, you know, your conduct when you're around people doing their job. You know, this is their job. Like, you can't just treat it like it's your own personal, you know, getaway. It's not. it's for everybody, and they you have to have a degree of professionalism whether you're playing a game or whether you're in an office. So I'm siding with the Nuggets on this one. It just seems like the safe play.
She just got
too much time on her hands to try to like tarnish the reputation of the team and like go on this, you know, journalism rampage around local Colorado cities to try to get back at them.
I mean Westbrook dealing with profanity and the Westbrook and whatever stuff, and then the Denver, you just got referees dealing with the fan that's just giving them way too many birthday cards and Christmas cards. Like,
which, like, yeah, it's like, that's nice, but like, you shouldn't do that, you know? Like, you shouldn't be able to do that. Like, it's just weird.
It is weird.
You don't know them. Like, why? Like, it's kind of creepy. Like, why does this random lady know my birthday? Like, it would make sense if, maybe she knew a referee, like, that she was friends with them, but not if it's just like a, you know, guy you see doing the job because you go to all the games. That's just weird.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's been a series of what a week of bizarre news, because we also have the Jontay Porter news, mm-hmm. Michael Porter Jr.'s brother getting busted for irregular betting activity surrounding prop bets on his stat lines.
I had no idea that this guy was actually related to Michael Porter Jr. before all this stuff broke out. Like, I knew this guy was like a bench warmer on the Raptors, but I didn't know he was his brother. It's really weird.
I had no idea this man existed, and it's crazy, but it's also not shocking to think that like something like this would happen, right? Because it's like,
yeah,
the fact that you can make over and under bets on individuals, including like end of bench guys like Jontay Porter. Like, I wonder how many bets were placed on his over and under. Like, you could easily just fall through the cracks where nobody's really paying attention to irregular bets. And I don't know if he did it or not, but it does bring up an interesting question of like whether the NBA has the capabilities to monitor all these individual bets and irregularities that could occur. And especially when you have a player, I don't know if, again, these are all still allegations, but you get like these two-way player guys that are on, you know, modest contracts relative to the NBA and could get themselves an additional payday by, you know, playing these making these bets or tipping folks. And it just seems like a pretty realistic conspiracy, I think, that could happen within these guys. That, you know, don't actually get the spotlight and don't have the high optics and visibility from the whole world.
Yeah, I think this is going to set an example for the rest of the league, because it's very serious if you have any NBA players or anyone associated with the teams fixing certain results of the game, because it tarnishes the integrity of the game and makes it so like, oh, like, everything's just rigged. You know, it's kind of like how everyone jokes about how the NFL is you know, all staged. Like, you don't want that happening to the NBA. And this is just like, this could be a first domino if you don't knock it out of the way as soon as possible. And it shows that the NBA is watching, even for the smallest guys, like the most insignificant players on the team, they will catch you. And you cannot get away with, you know, giving away information that, like, you know, isn't public, taking yourself out of a game to help your friends and family win prop bets on you, like that, all that side of stuff, you, like, that cannot fly. Like, if the NBA is going to succeed in the betting world, you have to be able to quash any insider information that gets out. And so I think, unfortunately, like, they're going to probably make a huge example of this man. Like, he might be banned from the league. He might be suspended for a long time, because you cannot allow the league to get tarnished like this. Like, there's too much at stake. Yeah.
I would say banned from the league would probably have to be the course of action. Cause again, the integrity of the league is everything. The fans are everything for the league. And, you know, I just think about boxing, where like, I feel like boxing has that and like track and field with the drug use. But boxing has that stigma of matches are fixed, you know, you can't trust the judges. And I think that's hurt boxing over the last 20 years. You know, frankly, it is a sport that has been declining rather than experiencing growth. I think its peak was in the 90s, and it hasn't really hit that again. I think that's a part of it.
Right. Had that brief stint where Manny Pacquiao was like all the rage.
Right.
And now all they get is Jake Paul. So which everyone thinks those fights are fixed too. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, it's serious, man. Like I think they're going to come down hard on this guy. I would be very shocked if they didn't do something like very crazy in response to this.
And here's the scenario that basically has set a lot of this up is there was an increased betting interest on the under for Porter's stat line, which that the line was set at 5.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists. And the over and under for made three pointers was at just 0.5. Basically, that was the under. And basically, Porter went out there and played 4 minutes and then left the game because, quote unquote, an aggravated eye injury that he suffered 4 days earlier. So he didn't end up scoring against the Clippers, but had three rebounds and one assist, but didn't attempt a three. But that next day for DraftKings, it was the biggest money winner for bettors of any NBA props from games that evening.
Yeah, that's wild.
So some folks got rich off a random over and under line for a random NBA player.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like all of these betting sites have such advanced data analytics. Like this stuff will not just fall through the cracks. You know, like you're not. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're just at a random blackjack table counting cards. Like they will see these irregularities super easily. Like their software is set up to be like, these are the ones we lost the most money on. So they're not going to get away with this. And I think this is great. You know, like do not ruin the integrity of the league with betting. Like, yeah, just keep things the way they are.
Yeah, there's also accusations on the SB Nation did a deep dive into Twitter accounts, and they're connecting it to that. They say that Dante Porter has a burner account called Tay Trades, which is a Twitter account that that regularly retweets and likes tweets related to sporting bets and cryptocurrency. So
no.
They're taking the, you know, inferring that this guy is a huge fan of that world. And I mean, anybody can be a fan of that world, but you know, you start connecting the dots and it starts smelling a little guilty here.
Yeah. Well, he might want to get used to using that handle because that might be his day job pretty soon.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on here, John? Jontay Porter. Michael Porter Jr. came out this morning, I believe, defending his brother, saying, I know he's excited to play basketball and highly doubt that he would do anything to put that in jeopardy. Obviously alluding to the fact that Jontay Porter is on a two-way contract and has worked his way to get himself onto an NBA roster. What do you think?
Well, there's either one of two ways you could look at this. I don't know what the relationship is between these brothers, if they're close at all. Michael Porter Jr. knows for damn sure if he bet on himself or gave away information so people could bet on him.
Mm-hmm.
Or he would flat out say, like, no, like, he didn't do it.
Yeah.
But the fact that he says highly doubt instead of he didn't do this leads me to believe that he's just, like, covering his own ass. Like, oh, yeah, I had no idea he was doing this stuff.
Right.
And if it comes out, he'd be like, oh, I'm surprised. Like, I highly doubted he would do this, but wow, what a surprise. So, I think he for sure knows what's going on.
Yeah.
I guess the other option is he's just not that close with his brother, so he doesn't really know what's going on in his life. So I guess he could highly doubt it. So either way, great, great PR statement by Michael Porter Jr. He will not get in trouble at all for anything that Jontay does. And
he also didn't commit.
Not commit one way or the other. Yeah, it's the perfectly worded PR statement.
I love that you put your lawyer hat on for this one.
Oh, man, are you kidding me? Yeah, this is just, like, so vague. So vague. This is your brother, man.
It's either yes or no.
Yeah, complete legalese here.
Yeah. Okay, Jontay Porter. I mean, my thoughts are, like, I can see it again, like, yeah, the coincidence, it's just the dots connecting there. Feels like it might be happening. But, I mean, in parallel also, Baseball is also dealing with a major story here regarding the interpreter of the Los Angeles Dodgers superstar. Mm-hmm. Shohei has also come out to report allegations that he also bet online here. I don't know much about this story, but I did see it. I did see the statement yesterday, and quite the pickle for the leagues these days, especially as they're putting more and more sponsorship, as they're getting more and more sponsorship dollars from these betting giants.
Yeah, I don't know much about the baseball stuff myself, but one of my friends today did. He basically gave me the skinny on it that this is very likely a scapegoat situation. Mm-hmm. Where to keep Shohei out of trouble, out of tarnishing his legacy, his career, this man took the fall.
Wow. Yeah. Epic.
Very epic. Maybe we'll get a 30 for 30 on it 30 years from now.
That'd be awesome. I think I believe it, man. Okay, moving on from betting scandals and Vicky Ray.
Yeah, geez, what a weird start to this podcast, man. Like,
about this, yeah, Joel Embiid may still return before the end of the season. Very little detail shared by Nick Nurse in terms of how Joel Embiid is progressing. But I feel like we've chatted about this topic a few times now. But I think we probably both still stand, at least I do, that it doesn't really seem like there's much for Joel Embiid to come back to. 76ers are 4-6 over their last two. They're currently on a two-game losing streak, 39-34, while the Bulls are still four games behind them. To me, it still feels like this team is likely headed to either a play-in loss or a first-round playoff sweep.
Yeah, it seems very hopeless. I mean, the best they can get is the 7th seed. You're playing the Bucks. You know, that's not a very good scenario in and of itself, so Embiid's going to be at maybe 75% of himself at best by the time that he's even able to come back and get a few games in. So, yeah, just it still doesn't make sense. I'm going to be shocked like a couple weeks from now when we talk about Embiid returning. I hope it doesn't happen, honestly, for his own sake. Like, just come back next year healthy. Just let this year be a wash. See what the team can do in free agency. I know you got Tobias Harris coming off the books. That's a lot of money you can spend on some quality players. So, yeah, just you gotta know when you cut your losses, man. You gotta know when.
Yeah, I agree here. Not much to come back to. Hornets report that LaMelo Ball is getting shut down for the season. Not surprising at all.
No.
only 22 games from the young guy, and his least amount of games played, and he's now in year 4 in the NBA, and the most games he's played was in his sophomore year where he touched 75 games, and outside of that, it's been 36 games and now 22 games this year. I mean, LaMelo Ball really looked like he was the next star of this league. I mean, he basically, to me, he looked like he would be where Tyrese Haliburton is today, just a double-double machine with, you know, I don't know if he'd be a 40% three-point shooter, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was.
He could be a bigger scorer than Haliburton for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, what a downfall for the Ball brothers here, and you know for LaMelo. I mean, he got his extension, so that will kick in next year at $35 million for the season. But for a guy that hasn't given you any more than 40 games since 2021, do you think you're feeling a little shaken here, Sean? Oh. if you're the Hornets,
yeah I'm definitely worried. I mean, because this is, like you said, is 2 years in a row now where he hasn't even been able to play half the games. We saw him do it his sophomore year. That's what you're looking for. But yeah, 2 years in a row does make you worry a lot. And obviously I think it's the right move for them to shut him down. I mean, you have nothing to gain from him coming back and playing, you know, 7 or 8 games to close out this season that you're clearly not going anywhere for. So, yeah, we just have to see if, you know, maybe he is healthy by the time the season's over. He can get in a full off season. Lonzo can get in a full off season, perhaps. And then we see the Ball brothers make an epic 2025 comeback. crazier things have happened, but yeah, I wish they would give us the same news for your boy Mark Williams.
Oh,
like, what,
yes.
What? Where the hell is this guy? Like, what? He's been injured almost as much as LaMelo Ball has this year, and we still have no information on, like, what exactly he's dealing with, if he's coming back or not. Like, this team is so bad with injury reporting. It's just so infuriating.
Yeah, Williams hasn't played since December 8th against Toronto. I've completely forgot about this guy's name, but I was so excited about. I thought this guy was on his
way. Guy, man. You were high on Mark Williams at the start of the season.
I was high, and he was playing well. He's a double-double machine, averaging 65% from the field. Like he was a commanding, athletic dude that was really helping this team, you know, establish some sort of defensive identity. And then he goes down December 8th and no timetable, no real word on what the hell is going on.
Yeah, we're here almost 4 months later with, like, barely any more information.
Yeah, I thought this guy was, I don't know if he would actually win the most improved player, but I thought he was on his way to potentially being a finalist for that award.
Oh, for sure.
Obviously out the window now, but yeah, just a shame on what's going on with this team. I mean, I guess they found a gem in Miles Bridges coming back and having himself a hell of a season, but that's not a guy we particularly love to talk about.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a weird roster. Brandon Miller seems to be hitting his stride here towards the end of the season here.
Yeah, I feel like their pieces they got from OKC aren't panning out too poorly either with Trey Mann and Misic. Both those guys have showed some flashes of you know, something. I don't know if it qualifies them to be a true starter on a playoff team, but they're at least, like, you know, playing some decent ball. So there's some hope for them, but this is one of those franchises, man, where you're like, I don't know, like, it's like we're talking about OKC, the Timberwolves, they finally, like, figured it out and gotten their franchises on track. This is one of those franchises where I'm like, are they ever going to get on track? Ever? Have the Hornets ever had a 50 win season? I don't think they have.
I don't think so either.
It's just, like, crazy that a team can be this bad all the time. You know, even the Clippers have had their days in the sun, at least from the regular season perspective. I can't even remember the last time this team made the playoffs. It was probably in the Kemba Walker era.
Yeah, but probably.
Like, as an 8 seed, I don't know, like, barely making the playoffs. It's just, this is probably the sorriest franchise in the league. They probably have, they just seem like they have terrible staff. They obviously can't keep their players healthy. They don't draft well. Remember they drafted James Bouknight a few years ago? Where the hell did that guy go?
I forgot about that. They need to send this team and hit a hard reset. Ship them off to Seattle. Give them the Vegas.
Yeah.
Those two cities are desperate for an NBA team.
Yeah, give them the Vegas. Let Bron buy the team. He'll put them in the right direction.
Yeah, here's a question for you. Is Misic in the NBA next year? A 30-year-old rookie. I did not realize this was his first year in the NBA.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's like, you know, you remember when Ricky Rubio came into the league? He was already, like, older, but he was, like, the EuroLeague MVP.
Right.
This guy's basically the same, like, a little older than when Rubio came into the league, but he's EuroLeague MVP. I believe he played for a Turkish team. And, yeah, he's a good player. He just didn't really have a role on OKC because they're already so deep. They didn't really need him. But this guy can play, man. Like, he's not just doing this, I think, just because, you know, there's no one else on the team. I feel like he's actually a decent player. I think he will have an NBA contract next year.
Okay. Here's a question for you. When was Misic drafted into the NBA?
Oh, like what year? Like who owns his rights? Oh, man. I'm going to say like 2020.
2014.
Oh, no way. Wow.
He was a second rounder, 22nd pick in the second round by the Philadelphia 76ers in 2014.
He was 20 years old.
Yes.
And they just let him simmer in Europe for 10 years.
I guess so.
That's what we call a sous vide draft right there.
Yeah. He's a vintage, well-aged. Yeah,
they let that man age, literally.
Yeah. hot teams, we got to talk about this team. The Houston Rockets. Yeah. Oh, I didn't believe this. I was watching that Rockets OKC game. I did not think they'd actually pull that off, but they did it in overtime.
They got some help, to be fair.
Yes, right? They did. SGA sits out. Yeah, and you know, we were joking that it just feels like maybe the whole NBA is in on this. The whole yeah. NBA is just eager to see
yes.
the mighty fall from the tree, which is the Warriors, who have only missed the playoffs once, that one anomalous year when Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
Was out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But outside of that, this team has been going to the playoffs. I'm just going to take off the top of my head. I'm going to say since 2014, 2013, yeah, maybe.
That sounds about right. Yep.
But they're in serious danger here because of this Rockets team that has lost Sengun a month ago now. But Jalen Green has found his stride and has taken this team on his back alongside everybody else. And they've only have one loss in the month of March so far. How can we possibly explain what is going on here with this team, Sean?
Oh, my gosh. I think the conspiracy theory is the most reasonable at this point, because you don't see teams like this, teams well below 500 coming into March, all of a sudden go on a 10-game winning streak, mm-hmm. won 12 of 13 games in March so far. It really just... It goes against all logic, and like a team like this should not be able to have a 10-game win streak, especially in this late stretch of the season when it matters most. Like, it really doesn't make any sense at all. So you really just point to, you know, like, these guys just figured something out. Like, something is just clicking where they just came together and were like, we're gonna give ourselves a shot. And mm-hmm. Jalen Green seems to obviously be the leader of that charge. I mean, we talked about him last week when they were still on the hot teams. I didn't expect to be still talking about them. But he's just continuing his dominance. In three of his last five games, he's had 7 3-pointers. And in two of those games, he shot 7 for 11 from three, which is just an absurd, absurd night. And yeah, they're a game behind the Warriors now for that 10 seed. And this is the big one. They play against them on April 4th, a week from now. That is going to yes. be primetime TV.
Yeah. Come on, NBA. Have the guts and put this game on TNT.
There's no way it can't be, right? It has to be. Yeah. This is going to be the most crucial game of the rest of the regular season across the entire league.
Yeah. It might be the biggest game of the last big game of the Warriors Big Three era. Like, if they lose that game.
And it's going to have Dylan Brooks versus Draymond Green, man. When everything's on the line, there could not possibly be a better setup for this matchup.
Yeah. Also, when talking about this, there's also one other name I think that's worth bringing up in this hot streak that the Rockets have gone on, and that's Amin Thompson. Mm-hmm. Not to get lost, because I think we were both big fans of these brothers going into the NBA, and I think, you know, I think the fellow brother on the Pistons side has gone down with injury, but I think he had some sparks throughout the year. But Amin Thompson has found some consistency in his game over this last stretch. And since the month of March, he's averaging 13 points, close to 8 rebounds, and a pretty, pretty decent and absurd for a rookie, I think, is like 60% field goal shooting for not being a big man. This is really good, because this is like where rookies basically struggle. It's just scoring the ball at an efficient clip in the NBA, especially if they're not big men. Mm-hmm. So for Amin Thompson to have found that efficiency in this month of March, and, you know, have himself a night like against OKC where he had 25 points off close to 60% shooting, ridiculous 80% from the 3-point line. That's an anomaly, but I think it just shows that the guy is like starting to break out of his shell a little bit here.
Yeah, he is very legit, and I think at this point he'll probably finish third in Rookie of the Year rankings behind Wemby and Chet, mm-hmm. Which, I mean, early in the season it looked like Jaime Jaquez was going to get that, but with the stretch that Amin Thompson has had lately with them going on this huge win streak, it has to be him. I mean, he looks so valuable out there. He's really made up for the fact of what they're missing in Sengun with the defensive rebounds, with the easy buckets around the hoop. Obviously, he doesn't have the same playmaking ability as Sengun, but Jalen Green has made up for that on his end.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard for me because I love Sengun. I really do, and I think he's an amazing player. And them going on a win streak like this makes it seem like they're better without him, which I do not. I on the record, I do not believe that is the case. I believe that he would easily still be a part of this win streak if he was on the floor with them right now. Mm-hmm. But they're still figuring it out, man. For a young team like this to do this is such an encouraging sign for them moving forward. Speaks to the culture that Ime Udoka's built. Speaks to the veteran players on this team really letting the young guys cook and let them grow and develop under them. Like Fred VanVleet, Dylan Brooks, you got to hand it to them too. And to just have a high IQ rookie like Amen Thompson to really wrap it all together. It's just, I don't know, it just seems like the perfect storm. The schedule hasn't been, you know, super like difficult either, you know, like they've had some pretty easy games. Obviously the one against OKC, Shai Gilgeous sits, and you know, you could argue if that was intentional or not, but yeah, they still get the job done. And yeah, I'm just really hoping that they're still there come, you know, 6 days from now, or actually that's exactly a week from now when they go up against the Warriors. And that could be the deciding factor if they are able to translate this enormous successful run they've had into actual, you know, success in the standings and getting into that play-in tournament. That would be huge for this team.
Yeah, and here's the question. They got the Jazz next, then the Mavericks, and then the Timberwolves before they see the Warriors back in Houston on April 4th. So win streak continue? Or do they lose two in a row here?
The Jazz one should be super, you know, be super in their favor. You know, it's so hard to know how much to favor them in any of these matchups because, like, they are on this 10-game winning streak and they're ahead of the Jazz by a lot standings-wise, but I just don't know. Like, this team could lose to anybody, could beat anybody right now. But yeah, like the Timberwolves and the if they can win one of the two between the Mavs and the Timberwolves and be 2-1 going into that Warriors game, they're still going to be right there, I think, because I don't think there's any way that the Warriors create enough separation for this game not to matter still by the time we get to next week.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that I'm looking at the schedules here, and the Warriors play the Mavericks on April 2nd. And the Rockets play the Mavericks just a few days there. Oh, so wow.
The Mavericks decide the fate.
Yeah, the Mavericks could decide the fate here of Rockets versus Warriors. So,
that's exciting.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one to watch. New York Knicks, 3-game winning streak. I've won 8 of the last 10. Have taken the surpassed the Cavs to take the 3 seed in the East. Mitchell Robinson returns. No OG or Randall. But you got Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo exploding, having the absolute game of his life to go for 40 points. I mean, Thibodeau's just like following the main thing where he's like, this guy figures out how to squeeze the absolute most that he can out of his players for better or worse. Yeah, I mean, the guy still continues living to his mythology here with the New York Knicks. And this team is just, it's exciting to see them do this well.
Yeah, with a roster that you would not expect to be as elite as it actually is performing, with the amount of injuries that they've had. I mean, we're talking about 3 of their starters being out, you know? They traded away one of their starters at the start of the year, and the other 3 are injured. So yeah, you're really looking at Jalen Brunson and their bench, right? Like when you actually like peel it back, you're like, wow, like they're going on this huge winning streak with just Jalen Brunson and these guys filling in, obviously having big games like Miles McBride. Like, what the hell? Like, this didn't that guy make like 8 threes the other day? So like, yeah, obviously they're having these guys like Hartenstein step up, Precious Achiuwa, who like I think everyone considered to be a terrible basketball player.
He was out of the league.
Yeah, is now all of a sudden like a solid rotation piece that actually contributes to winning. So it's just so impressive to me that they're able to do this. And obviously the role players deserve a lot of credit, but at the end of the day, it really all comes back to Jalen Brunson being that rock for this team, averaging over 28 points a game, averaging over 30 points a game during the month of February when they really needed him most. And I think that, you know, because of the circumstances that this guy came into the league, you know, he was a senior when he got drafted. You know, he wasn't one of those guys that was a one and done in college. He had to fight and claw his way to just become a late first round pick in the draft that he was drafted in, he had to back up Luka for 4 years. He had to win a first round playoff series against the Jazz without Luka for people to realize that this guy is actually very legit. And even then, the Mavericks didn't give him 4 year, $100 million contract that the Knicks were more than willing to give. And even then, we're still wondering, is this guy really that good? I don't really know. Yeah. There is absolutely no way anyone could say otherwise at this point. He, I think at this point, is more a question of, is he a super max player? Yeah. And I have to say yes, given the results of what he's provided. What do you think, Alan?
Third seed for the New York Knicks, figuring out how to make his teammates better. I mean, if you can take, I don't know if it's Tom Thibodeau, it probably is Tom Thibodeau plus Jalen Brunson, but you're taking guys like Josh Hart also and Dante DiVincenzo. I've already mentioned his name, but again, it's like, and you said the plethora of second tier role players. Like, yeah, there is something to be said there in your ability to lead. The New York Knicks, though, real deal, as of today, with the performances they've been given, they are now both in top 10, both in defensive rating and offensive rating. Wow. Which, you know, whenever I see a team like that, that spells, you know, real deal. I think once you sneak into the top five in one of these categories, then you can really start thinking about, maybe this team is a contender. They're not quite there yet, but the fact that they still have two secret weapons laying in the background in Randall and OG just spells that this team could be trouble in the playoffs or whoever ends up meeting them, perhaps the Bucks in the second round with their struggles. This would be a dangerous matchup for them.
Yeah, and you've seen the absurd plus minuses that OG's had on the Knicks. Have you seen those? Like,
I have not.
He's averaging like a plus minus of plus 20. In like all the games that he's played for the Knicks, which is just like baffling, because it's like, man, it makes sense why the Raptors valued him so heavily, but why the hell could he not do this on the Raptors? Like, why is he so much better all of a sudden and impacting the game so much more? Like, he has the most absurd plus minus of like any player in recent memory. It's just a shame that he's being injured right now, but yeah, this team is just so fascinating to watch. And the amount of times that, like, and we've talked about this before, because they had that week where they held the Sixers, it was the Sixers of the Magic, I believe, to like under 80 points, like twice in a row, which is unheard of in today's NBA. And I mean, I don't think we asked the question enough to bring it back to Brunson. Like, where does he rank amongst all NBA players in your mind, Alan? Is he a top 20 player? Is he a top 15 player? Where do we put him?
I'm definitely putting him top 20. And I mean, for a while there, I don't know if I was not that I wasn't a fan of Jalen Brunson, but I don't know if I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I had doubts of whether he was actually as good as people were clamoring him to be, but I think I've seen enough over the last month since that All-Star game, since the All-Star break, really, I think I'm putting him top 15. In the league right now,
which is like, it's so hard to list out, right? Because there's so many good players in the league right now, but he's one that you'd overlook just if you're like trying to name names off the top of your head of like, oh, like this guy's elite, this guy's elite, this guy's elite. But like, he deserves it over, I think over guys like Devin Booker right now. I think I would put him over Devin Booker. Jimmy Butler, I might put him over Jimmy Butler right now. It's, you know, it's one of those things, like, that's very controversial, I'd say, for a lot of people that would consider that like a blasphemous statement, right? To be like, there's no way he's better than Book, but you gotta give this man his credit.
Yeah, I mean, the body of work he's put together this year, fourth in total points for the whole year. I mean, he's there, and I like what I'm seeing from Jalen Brunson. Let's see, where is he at? He's fifth in points per game, right next to Jason Tatum and Kevin Durant. Wow. And I mean, to your point, he might be having a better year than even the Steph Curry and Trae Young and some of these other guards that we're used to listing pretty high up on the list. So Jalen Brunson Scott is over Devin Booker in terms of points per game, which that's what these two guys are known for. But I mean,
and his team is better than Booker's, and Booker has more All-Star caliber players on his team. So
yeah,
Jalen Brunson's, I think, having a better year this year. I think you rank him higher than Devin Booker.
Yeah. Here's another guard to talk about is the Mavericks' 5-game win streak. 9 of the last 10. I don't know if we talked about this when I'm losing my memory of when exactly this happened, but Kyrie Irving with that ridiculous left-handed game winner.
Oh, yeah. That was a week ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a week ago now. But the Mavericks just go into Sacramento and just clean house, 132-96, and they play the Kings again tomorrow.
Oh, no.
We'll see how that one goes. But, I mean, Luka obviously playing an MVP level, averaging 32-10-10 in the month of March. Oof. A triple-double machine here. But yet, you know, I was reading something about Luka earlier this week, is that, like, despite all these numbers that he's doing and putting together, you know, I have yet to really seriously myself consider or see any publication consider Luka anywhere near the top three in terms of MVP ranking. Mm-hmm. I feel like most places I see him is still ranked fourth in terms of MVP power rankings, and he's still there in most rankings as of today.
Yeah.
What are we doing a disservice here to Luka by putting him that low? Are we letting a guy, you know, put together one of the best bodies of work and not giving him the right credit for it?
No, because his team is still fighting to stay out of the mm-hmm. play-in tournament.
Yeah.
That is the huge difference. You look at the top two, Jokic and Shea. Where are their teams in the standings? All the way at the top. Yep. So, yeah, it's really not a disservice. I think it's just how the MVP is awarded. You know, and when Embiid right. won it last year, the Sixers were the 2 seed, I believe. So, if you're fighting for a play-in, to stay out of the play-in tournament still at this stage of the season, I know that he's had a great March. And he's had a great year altogether, let's be real. Like, these 32-10-10 numbers, like, they're amazing. But he really hasn't been playing that much worse the rest of the year. It's just a matter of, it doesn't help that his team doesn't have the same amount of talent, per se, as the Nuggets, as the Celtics, or the Bucks, or even the Thunder, maybe. I don't know. That one's questionable, actually. I might even give the nod to the Mavericks, because at least, like, you know, Kyrie is your second best player, is better than anything that the Thunder have. So mm-hmm. when you put it that way, it's like the highest you could put Luka MVP-wise, I think, is like 3.
Right. Yeah, and Luka, for calling out here, is actually averaging a career high in points this year at 33.9. But but yeah, I mean, I think it's just the West is just so tough this year that the Mavericks find themselves in that 6th seed. And there's quite a gap here between them and the quiet Pelicans that are still finding themselves there in the 5th seed with only a half game behind the Clippers. So Clippers are also
so scary,
another
man.
Interesting team. to talk about, but in terms of the disservice, it's such a tough call with whether making a call of whether we are doing a disservice to Luka by not putting him further up in MVP rankings. But I think the good news for Luka is that, you know, Jokic is 28 years old and he's 24.
There you go.
so it may only be a matter of time before Luka starts winning a few MVPs in a row.
Yeah, but here comes Wemby, though.
That's true. Here comes
oh,
Wemby.
Lord, he coming.
Yeah. Woo. Next team, Lakers, 5-game win streak within 1.5 games of the Kings for the 8th seed. I mean, these teams keep the Pacific Division is just trading blows here towards the bottom of the standings between the Warriors, Lakers,
the
Kings.
The whole damn division
Suns.
Has a winning record. The whole damn division has a winning record.
Yeah, until they start playing each other. I think the Lakers still have a few games they have one more game with the Warriors. But yeah, I mean, the Lakers beat up a really, you know, starless Grizzlies team last night. They're 136-124. D'Angelo Russell a few games ago also got the franchise record for most 3-pointers made in a single season, which is surprising that it took this long for a Laker to beat that record, considering how the plethora of threes being shot. Over the last, like, 10 years.
It's surprising, but Alan, as a Laker fan, you know that is not surprising, given how three-point shooters do in L.A. versus other places that they play, a la Malik Monk, a la Malik Beasley.
Christian Wood.
Yeah, Christian Wood. Yeah, there is a curse on the Lakers franchise that they can't be good at shooting threes when they come to L.A.,
Yeah, it doesn't matter how good they were the year before. But I will say this, that about D'Angelo Russell, just pulled up his numbers. And this year, right now, his career or his season average is 42% from three, which is really good. That's pretty good. Yeah, his best year in Minnesota was 39%. So somehow, yeah, D'Angelo Russell may have broken that curse. This is the best three-point shooting season of his career as a Laker, which may be a big game changer here for LA. But yeah, they get crucial back-to-back wins while resting LeBron for one game and Anthony Davis for the other. And they have the seventh easiest schedule for the rest of the year. What are we thinking here for the play-in race? Sean, do you think the Lakers actually manage to avoid this and get home court advantage in that 7-8 seed, or do you think this is where they're destined? This is where they've been all year, is 9 or 10.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, they needed this win streak for sure to keep themselves in the game, but yeah, they come alive in March. That's what they do. They did this last year. They'll do it again this year. And is it going to be enough for them to get the 8th seed? I mean, they're going to need some help. I mean, the Kings are going to have to fall off. It seems like the Suns are starting to reverse the ship a little bit. Obviously, we just talked about the Mavericks on their winning streak. So the Lakers really aren't making up a ton of ground on any of these teams. But they have to be going for the 8th seed. The 8th seed is huge because you give yourself the cushion of not having to win the first game. You can still just win the second game and still make the playoffs. Obviously you don't want to do that, but any cushion's better than no cushion. So it is super important for them to get this, continue to win like this. And they should be able to with this schedule easing up for them. And I don't know how many more back-to-backs they have, but as long as they don't have any more of those, we should see LeBron and AD both out there. I know LeBron's ankle is just, one of those chronic things. It's just pain tolerance and how much he can handle. It's incredible what AD's been able to do this year, staying healthy. Yet we still find the Lakers in the 9 seed despite him having arguably his best season as a Laker ever, considering production and health. So, yeah, I mean it's great. They're coming alive right at the right time.
Yeah, if you're the Lakers, are you eyeing that Timberwolves matchup? That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean it's hard though. You can't, that's the thing we talked about earlier. It's like, you don't know who's going to be 1 through 3. Mm-hmm. So you could get the Nuggets or you could get the Timberwolves or you could get the Thunder. You can't decide that if you're the Lakers, you just have to get to the playoffs and pray that your matchup in the first round's good. You cannot afford to pick and choose who you're going to play.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in favor of the Lakers here, the Kings still have themselves quite a hefty schedule. They got the Mavericks, they got the Knicks, Clippers, Suns, and the OKC, and then one matchup against the Celtics in a few days. Oof. So still some tough games down the road for them. Sinking teams, Raptors, extending still losing streak to 12 games. I mean, off the news of one of their players potentially involved in a betting scandal here. Oh, man. Yeah, the Raptors have really fallen off, but I mean, this is a long time coming. If anything, this is them finally admitting to the fate that they should have admitted to years ago.
Yeah,
which
this is actually a good thing, right? This is what they should have been doing the whole time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're actually probably pretty happy with this losing streak because what it has allowed them to do is surpass, quote unquote, the Grizzlies in getting to be the 6th worst team in the league instead of the 7th worst team in the league, which gives them a much higher chance of keeping their first round pick that is only protected number 1 through number 6 to the San Antonio Spurs. If they fell even one spot, the Spurs would get that 7th pick, which would be absolutely just gangbusters value for giving them Jakob Poeltl last year.
Yeah, we keep bringing this up every week, and it still surprises me that this is a thing. Like the Raptors gave away this first round pick. Yeah, and I mean they still have a 4.5 game lead on the Hornets. So I don't even.
This is where they're stuck. I think they can't win any more games because if they somehow win another game and they let the Grizzlies get back to being the 6th worst team and they're in 7. that's such high odds that they give that pick to the Spurs that they're just going to shoot themselves. So you know that front office is going to do whatever it takes to just not win a single game the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the Hornets schedule, see if they could win any one game to advance.
I don't think so. They could win a few games and they'd still be worse than the Raptors. So it's really just between, from what I can tell, the Grizzlies and the Raptors as far as win total goes.
Yeah, let's see. Are there any winnable games here for the Grizzlies? They got the Pistons twice.
Oh, man, that's huge for the Raptors.
Yeah. And then they also have the Spurs.
Also huge. Yeah, okay.
So those are three winnable games. Yeah,
so this is... What about the Raptors? Did you see what the Raptors' schedule was? I can't imagine it's very much more difficult than the Grizzlies' schedule would be. That's just too good to pass up.
Yeah, the Grizzlies' schedule is tough. Their easiest matchup would probably be the Wizards, which is an easy one, but then they have Bucks, Lakers, Timberwolves, Pacers, Heat.
Okay, so they got a lot of nice losses coming for them. So that lines up perfectly.
We might not see the Raptors win another game until 2025. I'm going to assume they're going to.
They would consider that a success, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we might not see a Raptors win realistically until like December 2024.
Unreal.
Yeah. Let's see what else. What else we got? The Cavs, 7 of the last 10, falling to the 4th seed. A loss to the Hornets, 118-111, and Donovan Mitchell has just continued to be in and out of the lineup this whole year with his knee issues. Despite the Cavaliers finding also Jared Allen having himself a heck of a year, with Evan Mobley going down, but. Yeah, it's just another tough one here for the Cavaliers, despite going all in with this core group that they have themselves with.
Yeah, plenty of injury woes, obviously, with Mitchell. You know, he came back for a few games. The knee was still bothering him, so he's sitting out more. Does not really bode well for the rest of the season or into the playoffs. And then you just had Evan Mobley come back the last few games, and it seems like he doesn't have the step. Because, I mean, he took off, I think he played like the first two games of March, and then he took another 3 weeks off and just came back this week, and he just doesn't look quite himself yet. And his numbers speak to that, too. Like, he's just not putting up the same numbers that he was averaging last year or even earlier this year. So maybe he'll be able to, get his in-shape legs underneath him before the playoffs start, but... Man, with the way the Knicks have been playing and with how much the Cavs have struggled, it's hard for me to see them climbing back up to the 3 seed at this point. And if the Magic can go on another winning streak before the end of the season, they might even own home court against the Cavs in that first round matchup there, which would be very interesting also.
Yeah.
But I think the Cavs would still be favored against the Magic because of playoff experience. But yeah, with momentum is a real thing, and the Cavs they need to get some sort of momentum before the season ends, or it's just going to be another disappointing first round exit again. And then we're just going to be asking, is Donovan Mitchell going to re-sign or is he going to leave? And then they'll have to start from square one again. And so, yeah, a promising team just falling apart at the wrong time.
Yeah. They're going to need Donovan Mitchell back for the playoffs, or, I mean, even with Mitchell back, I honestly think the Orlando Magic might have a shot at this.
Definitely.
Squad.
I mean, yeah, we've seen the Cavs' weaknesses in the playoffs before. I would not give them a guarantee at all, even with the Magic having no playoff experience. And they fight hard, man. That's a gritty team.
They're a scrappy defensive team. And I think Jared Allen is the guy who's been having the best year. Evan Mobley had a great start. But Darius Garland himself is also having a slight off year. His scoring averages are down. His shooting percentages are down. You would think he would be seeing a huge upswing in the same way Jared Allen has with the injuries, but it just hasn't been working out that way for him. So if this team walks in there with a lack of confidence and not the offensive and no offensive punch, that Orlando defense might actually overwhelm them just enough. And the Orlando Magic might be able to scrap together just enough offense to win that series. So
yeah, and Orlando can match them in size too. I mean, they're one of the bigger teams when you have Franz Wagner at 6'8", Paolo at 6'9", 6'10", and Wendell Carter at the same height too. Like, they can match up against Mobley and Allen easily.
Yep.
So yeah, they have the size to match them. So it will be a very tough matchup for the Cavs.
Yeah, and you have the scrappy guards as well, and Cole Anthony, Suggs. Markelle Fultz.
Suggs, man. Suggs has become such a dog, man. It is. People aren't going to realize it until they see him play in the playoffs, but this dude will ruin your day. He will make your life hell on offense. Like, he's one of the best defenders in the league, and it won't be showcased for real until we see him in playoff action, but I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, for sure. Best performance since Anthony Davis, 52 minutes, 34 points, 23 rebounds in that double overtime win against the Bucks. I'm a little disappointed. This has happened a few times to me where I just watch the game. I'm like, oh, I don't know if the Lakers are going to do this tonight. And I just stop watching it. And then little do I know, a few hours later, I look on Twitter. It's like, oh, the game just ended. How is that possible? It's like they went to double overtime. Unreal. Wow. And Austin Reeves also had himself a hell of a game in that same
and
night
D'Angelo
as well.
And D'Angelo Russell, too.
Yeah. And D'Angelo Russell, the big three for the LA showing up. But Anthony Davis, 23 boards, just unreal.
Yeah, this was an insane game. For Anthony Davis to play 52 minutes of a game, I mean, who can call him injury prone now? You know, who can call him brittle now? That he came out here and played damn near the whole game, including overtime, missed 1 minute of play. That's some Tom Thibodeau stuff right there.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. The NBA is just crazy this year. I mean, Anthony Davis is putting numbers like this, but he's not even close to sniffing MVP territory. Yeah. Just because the numbers are crazy amongst the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
Dante DiVincenzo, 41 minutes, 14 for 23. And we talked about this too. His now infamous 40-point game against Detroit. they needed these minutes. They needed this performance for him to get that win.
11 threes. 11 out of 20 from three is just absurd. The fact that they even let him shoot 20 threes in this game, mm-hmm. like, how often does a guy get to shoot 20 threes in a game outside of, like, Steph Curry? Steph Curry don't even do that.
Yeah. And I mean, he hit him at a high clip, 55% shooting from three.
Crazy.
There's guys that can't even shoot regardless of where on the floor at that clip. So for him to just do it at that from three is pretty impressive. I guess the other funny thing about this performance is his free throw shooting percentage was worse than his 3-point shooting percentage. He was 1 for 3 from the free throw line.
No way. Wow. That's pretty sad. But regardless, man, crazy game from this guy. And his games have been like, haven't been this good, but he's been playing so well for the Knicks lately that he's putting the league on notice, and he's going to have a long NBA career because of the production that he's been putting up lately for the Knicks.
Oh yeah, he might end up with a ring. He has a ring from the Warriors. Was he on that Warriors team?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Jeremy Sochan, 10 for 19, 26 points, 18 rebounds in the game winning 3 in a win over the Suns.
Future
most improved player. I'm calling it now. I think this guy's got a shot at most improved next year.
Wow. Most improved. What about Jeremy Sochan? What do you like about his game that makes you be like, yeah, like this guy's going to be a difference maker next year?
I like nothing specifically about his game, but yeah, I like everything about his game. I mean, this guy just feels like he's the ultimate Swiss Army knife in the making. I mean, I just feel like he still has to get better at everything. But he's decent enough at everything.
I guess that leaves a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, but he's decent enough at everything that it feels like he can be like that Swiss Army knife. He's got good size. He's got good handles. Doesn't have great vision. And his field goal percentage is a bit inconsistent. But if he can figure those things out, and I mean, Greg Popovich believes in this guy. So if he believes in him, I'll believe in him. And he's also got a hell of a center down low to swing the ball over to and help bail him out at times. So I like this guy and I like his energy. I think he plays with high energy, so I think he'll find himself on the floor quite a bit next year for the Spurs.
How do you feel about his one-handed free throw technique?
It's bizarre, but he's also kind of a bizarre guy if you read his backstory. I mean, I think the dude grew up in Poland or something and bounced around Europe for a while, and then ended up going to Baylor out of all places for school. So dude comes from a pretty cultured. A journey. Yeah, very cultured and a very diverse experience. And I mean, I think I like his game. I think there's a lot of room for growth for this guy.
I'll hold you to it, Alan. I'm gonna be watching his progress closely next year, because this is like a very early hot take you're putting in for this man. Like, we haven't even gotten to the off season yet, and you're already calling him the most improved player of next year.
Oh, if he gets traded and he's not in San Antonio next summer, I'm taking that back.
Yeah, he'll only do it if he's in San Antonio. There's not a better situation he could go to.
I don't think so. He's only going to do it in San Antonio.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll give it that stipulation, and we'll make a note to monitor that.
Worst performances: Draymond Green ejected 4 minutes into that Magic game, and like we were saying earlier, that was a huge game for the Warriors. So for them to bounce back from this and win it was big, because if they lost that, the Hot Rockets were basically taking that playoff spot.
They're taking that
playing
spot. Let's just touch on this Draymond Green thing, obviously, because this is kind of like the thing we've been dealing with Draymond Green this whole time, and it's like the worst part about this is that they won the game. They won the game. Now he gets to be like, oh yeah, I motivated my team to like get that win. Like, we could have lost that game if I didn't give my team this boost and like energy wise. But now that they won the game, it's just, if they had lost, they could have been like, dude, Draymond, you gotta get it in line, man. Like, and because of that, he hasn't learned anything, and he'll continue to learn nothing. Which is great for TV. So great for TV. So great for this Rockets matchup coming up, because my God, dude, if him and Dylan Brooks don't literally try to kill each other at some point in this game, I would think it's not considered a success. And it's setting the stage, man. This is almost like the foreshadow of what's to come a week from now when we get that matchup.
Yeah, it would also have, I mean, if Curry didn't pull off that win with his ridiculous clutch shooting that he does against a very tough Orlando Magic, the team we were just talking about, it would have been a very weird, poetic ending to the season if they had lost that game. And I mean, and the season's not over again. Like, they subbed that matchup against the Rockets, and they need Draymond, and they need him to be firing on all cylinders. I think one of the storylines that also got lost about that game is that Andrew Wiggins had a decent game.
He did,
like,
he actually
stepped
up.
First time ever in a while. So maybe that has helped inject some energy into this team, you know, with Draymond leaving and giving Wiggins minutes and the opportunities to have himself that game. But we'll see, because this is as close to dangerous territory we've seen the Warriors team be in terms of seeing this era come to an end.
Right. For a team that's fully healthy, that has Steph Curry, that has Draymond, for them to be fighting to stay in the play-in tournament is pretty insane. Like, that is not how I expected this season to go for them. I thought they'd be solid, but
I did too.
Yeah, did not see this coming. And this is going to be exciting, man. It's going to make for a great storyline to close the season.
Yeah, part of me is like, I want to see this Warriors team book just get closed this season. This be the year that, you know, Wiseman. Andrew Wiggins is going through whatever it is that
Jordan
he's going
Poole.
Through. Jordan Poole gets traded in the summer, you know, and then the season just closes with them just completely missing play-in and playoffs. Wow. And Clay gets moved to the bench.
The writing's there, but I mean, Steph is still Steph, and I will believe in Steph until they have actually been eliminated.
Suns losing to a Wemby-less Spurs team, and you know, this is them desperately trying to get out of the play-in, and losing that game, you know, puts them back into that play-in territory, because for a while it looked like they had found themselves out of that swimming pool. But they're back in it. So I mean, the Suns just a very up and down team, and I haven't been paying attention to them too closely, but I don't know, Sean, if you have.
Not a ton. I mean, obviously, you follow the storylines of the season where, like, Booker's out for an extended period of time. Bradley Beal has missed about half the season, and he just looks like he's lost multiple steps in his game. Mm-hmm. He has a few good games here and there, but he's much more inconsistent. And the bench is about as good as we expected the Suns bench to be, which is very mediocre. Mm-hmm. The one bright spot for this team this year has been Grayson Allen. Like, Grayson Allen has looked so much better than I think anyone could have predicted. And he has nights where he's averaging like over 20 points a game on some nights and knocking down three pointers like no one's business, playing scrappy defense. Like, he has actually kept this team together on a lot of nights when, you know, maybe Devin Booker wasn't exactly doing Devin Booker things, or Kevin Durant had an off night and really wasn't shooting the ball a lot. Like, Grayson Allen's been kind of the most consistent guy for this team, which is kind of crazy to say because they got him for cheap.
Yeah, this is an eye-opener for me. I did not realize this, but Grayson Allen is averaging 47% from the three-point line
this year. No,
that is absurd.
He's been actually insane from three. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically three for six, or basically 2.8 for 5.8, so almost three for six. For the season on a career high of 13 points.
It's a lot of attempts.
It's Grayson Allen and Kevin Durant who have held this team afloat then.
Yeah, exactly. That's the crazy thing is a lot of nights Grayson Allen is the second best player on this team, whether it's Booker and then Allen or Durant then Allen. Like, he's been the rock that's kept them winning. And yeah, I think for the Suns, it's like they just... whether it's just the chemistry of just having so many different guys coming onto this team and it's just too much for them all to figure out how to play together, especially with a new head coach and Frank Vogel also. There's a lot of moving pieces for this team this year, so it didn't end up meshing, I think, as well as a lot of people, including myself, who I thought this was going to be a slam dunk for this team when they got Bradley Beal. They were able to get rid of Ayton and get Nurkic and get Grayson Allen. Like, I thought this was going to be a slam dunk team, and it definitely has not been. So, certainly lower than expectations, you know, dropping games like this to a Spurs G League team, essentially. Like, there's a lot of holes still for this team to figure out. I still wouldn't want to see them in a playoff matchup if I'm, you know, the one or the two seed. That's still a very scary matchup, as we saw last year when Booker and Durant were able to just basically get two games off the Nuggets by themselves. It's not looking like anyone's going to really favor them to be a title contender, like I think was the consensus coming into the year. Is like, oh, they'll definitely be a title contender. I don't think they're seeing that way anymore.
Yeah, I never believed in this team, but that was just me. Yeah.
Well, good on you, man. You're a better man than I.
I didn't even, like I said, my hot take, I think, was like that the trio would play less than 35 games together, and I think it's going to actually hit that number.
Yeah, you're pretty spot on there, man.
I think let's bring it on, NBA. I know the NBA is tempted. They might as well just do it. Bring on Kevin Durant versus LeBron in the first play-in game.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Let the old guys duke it out.
LeBron's going to have to go through Curry and Durant to get to the playoffs. That is some serious storyline right there.
Yeah, if they get the Lakers at 9, Warriors at 10, and then the Suns at 8, right? Eight,
and then they lose to, like, the Mavs, maybe, or the Kings.
Yeah. That would be a dream scenario for the NBA.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, that one game would skyrocket ratings.
But just let the old guys battle it out one last time.
Yeah, one last time. One ride into the sunset.
Yeah. Final thoughts to close off the podcast is, like, at the same time we're talking about what the seeding is going to be like for the NBA playoffs, the women's March Madness and men's March Madness is happening, and I don't know, this year just feels like the Caitlin Clark phenomenon is catching on to me. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, and I've watched a few of these Iowa games, and not gonna lie, they've been pretty exciting and pretty big nail biters, and I'm excited for some of these stars in the women's tournament. Paige Buckers, Angela Reese, Caitlin Clark, Juju at USC, like, there's a lot of exciting stuff happening. And then, of course, the South Carolina just powerhouse team. Yeah. And yeah, so it's a lot of exciting storylines. And Caitlin Clark, I think, is a phenomenal talent. Some of her games have been really exciting. So the final thought here is Caitlin Clark getting a $5 million deal potentially to join the big three. Ice Cube offered this, and why, and in terms of why he made this deal, he said, why wouldn't we? Caitlin's a generational athlete who can achieve tremendous success in the big three. I think the details of the deal is for her to play 10 games with the big three for the $5 million.
That's their whole season. It's a 10 game schedule. They play once every weekend throughout the summer. And yeah, she'd join up with the big three, and she'd be the first female athlete in there, obviously. And $5 million is a juicy salary.
Yeah.
Considering the WNBA only pays their first, like, the number one overall draft pick, starting at, I think, $70K. That goes to $90K by the end of the deal. So I don't foresee any reason why she wouldn't take this deal. Yeah, we'll see what she ultimately ends up doing. I'm sure she won't make a decision until after the NCAA tournament's completed. She's got, you know, plenty on her mind right now, but lot worse life you could have than have this looming in the background of, oh, maybe I'll take a $5 million deal.
10 games.
For 10 games, maybe inspire an entire generation of female athletes. You know, no big deal. I'll take care of that later.
Yeah.
It is truly amazing. Like, I like you, have been drinking the Caitlin Clark Kool-Aid. I'm like fully all in on all Caitlin Clark content. And watching her play in those games in the first two rounds of the tournament, like, obviously, you know, they were competitive for maybe a quarter and a half, but then she just pours it on, and you just see, you know, how transcendent of a talent she is in that sport. It's just, you can just tell, like, while she's on the floor, she just knows what she's doing out there more than anybody. Her basketball IQ is so high. Her skill set, her athleticism is just leagues above all of these other players. And it's such a delight to see, and a delight that a lot of people are latching onto it like we are. That they're seeing what we're seeing, and they're seeing that these women are competitive, and they're here to stay. And that's getting reflected in the ratings. I mean, we saw in the first round, average viewership for the women's league was actually higher than the men's tournament for the first time ever, which speaks volumes to, you know, what Caitlin Clark's done, what Angel Reese has done for the game, creating these storylines, having these personalities to latch onto, being these leaders on the court and off the court. And man, this big three, we'll see what happens at the big three league. Watching her play against men will be fascinating, and I'm hoping it doesn't just result in her looking just like way worse. I mean, I looked at some of the rosters of these teams, and man, if she's getting schooled by like a 50-year-old Katino Mobley, I'll be so upset.
But here's the thing, is that, like, I think she's a good enough shooter to where she could do damage and hold her own, you know, especially.
I really hope so, man.
Especially, like, in a three-on-three basketball, like, format.
I want to see her take this challenge head on. I really want to see her do it. I don't want it to be approached from, like, she has to prove that she compete with guys. Right. She doesn't have to do that. And I really hope that, like, you know, if she struggles in the big three league, that, like, people don't take that, like, oh, like, she's actually not that good. She's just a woman. Like, that's my fear. That people, you know, people are mean, and they'll perceive it that way. But, like, yeah, I think give her the opportunity. I'm just so curious to see how it goes. And, like, she'll still be dominating in the WNBA too, obviously. And I have to imagine WNBA games are going to start selling way better too. Ticket sales are going to be way better there. So, yeah, I think, the more exposure we get to Caitlin Clark, the better. And maybe this opens the path in the big three for other women athletes, too. It's just, like, that's really cool also.
Yeah, and I do think, like, she can hold her own. I think she's a good enough shooter. I don't think she's going to take people down in the post or, obviously.
She'll play like Steph, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and she's played against guys her whole life. Like, she played against her brother and his friends, like, and they weren't necessarily, like, NBA players, but they played at the college level. And, she knows she's competed against guys her whole life, so this shouldn't be any different.
Yeah, I don't think Katina Mobley could chase Caitlin Clark off like multiple pin down.
Dude,
dicks.
I saw that. I'm like, dude, Katina Mobley's in the big. Like, how old is this guy now? He has like gray facial hair all over. I'm like, dude, like, what? This is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I just realized I don't know who's in the big three anymore. I mean, I knew Jackson was in there.
Yeah,
for a while.
When we got the news about this, I'm like, man, like, who even plays in the big three? I'm like, I saw Rashard Lewis plays in the big
three. Lewis.
Yeah, I saw some names, man, that I was like, whoa, that's a blast from the past. Jody Meeks.
Oh, Jody Meeks plays Laker in the big legend.
Three. Yeah, Laker legend Jody Meeks. Yeah, there's some names, man, that you'll be like, whoa, like that guy still plays basketball in any capacity. That's crazy.
Yeah. this will be awesome, and I'm gonna do some low-key laughs to myself and look up these rosters in the next few minutes.
Oh yeah, it's great. I encourage everyone to just look up the rosters of these big three if you just want like a wave of nostalgia to wash over you. It is awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in, and we'll continue covering week in, week out, and we're just less than a month away from the start of the playoffs. So. Ooh. Exciting times.
So ready, man. Have a good week, everybody.